Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. Now, as you know, I love talking to other entrepreneurs and people who speak our language. So I think you guys are in for a real treat, especially if you love marketing. I believe that you need to be a marketer first, and then I guess you could say a business owner second. And the greatest marketer always wins. And if you understand the metrics behind it, you can make very clear decisions. The book we're talking about today is called Marketing Metrics: Leverage Analytics and Data to Optimize Marketing Strategies. The author, Christina Inge, is here, and I really appreciate your time, Christina.
I am so excited to be here, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of the book. What made you want to sit down and write a book called Marketing Metrics?
Well, I can tell you, I didn't. actually, a marketing story in and of itself about the power of thought leadership. I had written my first book on marketing analytics primarily because I teach marketing analytics at Harvard in the Division of Continuing Education. So for people going back to school to get their master's degree or their graduate certificate, and I'm always in awe of my students because Who goes to night school to Harvard in their spare time while working full time? But that's what my students do. And just incredible folks. And I've been teaching that class for a long time, and there was no textbook for it at all. So I saw a gap in the market of a textbook related to marketing analytics that really was not about Excel spreadsheets. It wasn't about crunching numbers. It was about the strategic use of marketing data for marketing leaders, whether that is someone working in marketing within a company or owning their own company. So I proposed that to another publisher, to Flatworld, wrote that, and it was very successful. And then I actually got tasked with writing the second book. An acquisitions editor from Kogan Page reached out to me and said, we'd like you to write a book on marketing analytics as well. And so that was the genesis of the second book, Marketing Metrics. That book morphed into something that is much more focused on strategic management, even less focused on the numbers, and much more focused on how do you make those numbers actionable and make good decisions using numbers. So how did I end up doing something I never thought of doing, right? If you become a small business owner, you become an entrepreneur, or hopefully a large business owner in time, you know, your first thought is you're doing what you want to do. But you need customers, right? And so what I have found is doing thought leadership, being very active on social media channels like LinkedIn, especially, has been where most of my business comes from. And in fact, Kogan Page found me because of my thought leadership, partly because of the class that I was teaching at Harvard, and partly also because of just content that I've been posting online. So if you are writing blog posts or you're doing workshops or teaching classes and you're wondering, is all of this thought leadership ever going to be worth it to me? I can tell you that it was. And in fact, that is how this opportunity found me. So keep on blogging, folks. Keep on doing thought leadership. It does pay off in the long run.
And the reason why, I guess you could say, is that the more you help people, right, give them insight, give them valuable takeaways, it's wild how that kind of comes back around and it helps you. It's this circle. And so doors open up when you talk about thought leadership, becoming an expert in your niche when it comes to either sales or marketing or business development or scalability or motivation or inspiration or tax strategy, whatever it is, the more you become known for it, it's almost like the world opens up doors that you're not even thinking of.
Absolutely. And that's the key. You want to be persistent about it. It took years of thought leadership to get to the point where now it's passively generating leads for me, not just this book, but tons of other opportunities have come my way because of the thought leadership that I've got out there on multiple different platforms. So it's a long game, but it's absolutely worth it because, like you said, it's about helping other people, right? It's about helping people with your knowledge and expertise, sharing that information out. And from there, you start to generate goodwill, and that turns into business. So keep on doing that. Keep on helping people and being proactive about it. And it does pay off.
Well, in your, I guess, opening chapter, data-driven strategy is referenced. And I don't think I was very data-driven in the very beginning, but the more successful we become, the more data that we have, we're able to make way better educated decisions. So it does take a little bit of time as a startup to, I guess you could say, attract all that data and then know how to use it. But whenever I started to, I was able to break down our metrics and realize that, wow, you know, our greatest source of customers comes from X, Y, and Z. Wow, we can really just focus, you know, maybe 75 to 85% of our energy and money there. And most likely we're going to get a great return on investment. And if you don't have data, and if you don't have the right CRM specifically, you can't capture the data. So this is something that evolves. But when you work with individuals, the startup phase is very different than the scaling phase. And so maybe you're able to make way better decisions with the right data, managing it, having the software. So is that something you help people break down and decipher?
It absolutely is. So at ThoughtLight, my company, we have been working with organizations on their CRM and their CRM data for years. We have expertise, my team and I, in a lot of the major CRM. Certainly, we're big fans of HubSpot. We have expertise in Salesforce. We have expertise in Keep, which was formerly known as Insightly. So, but it's not really about the tools. It's really about the strategy. What you want to do is, from the minute you start your company, you want to start gathering data about your customers, what they like, what they don't like, what types of messages resonate with them, what types of content, going back to the content marketing theme, resonates with them. You want to start building up profiles of your customers. And a CRM is a really critical part of that. So we work with my company and I, with companies large and small, but always love working with startups on coming up with that strategy of how do we leverage our CRM. If you're doing this yourself, and most of us do, because A, it takes time to delegate, two, not everyone obviously has the budget to delegate, I would say the most important thing is start using a CRM early and make sure all of your data that you're collecting actually goes into your CRM. How many times have we done this where, you know, we've had a conversation with a client or a prospective client, a prospect, and that went really well. And then maybe a month or two later, we should have followed up with them, but we forgot, we dropped the ball. Next thing you know, maybe that customer has slipped through our fingers. So that's one thing I often see people doing. But more to the point, you know, if you're running all of these campaigns across all these different channels, let's say you're doing LinkedIn advertising, you're doing thought leadership, you're doing content marketing, and you're wondering, well, how much of this is actually working for us? How much of this is turning into customers? If you're not gathering this data in your CRM, you can track click-throughs on your ads, click-throughs on your organic content marketing, or at least traffic that's coming to your website through your content marketing. Maybe you have a tag manager set up, and you're very disciplined about putting every URL, including what you post organically, up there with proper tags so you can track the traffic that comes in from it. All of that's great, but you don't have that insight down on the customer level until you have a CRM. Because what a CRM is going to do is it's going to give you the insight on the customer level of this customer came to us because of this marketing campaign or this organic post. That's what really resonated with them. That's what really appealed to them about our brand and why they're working with us now. And that's going to be helpful from the moment you pick up the phone. And you can tell how old I am by alleging that people pick up phones nowadays. But from the moment that you talk to that customer, the moment of that initial contact, if you have a CRM, you know what interested them. You know why they got excited to work with you, because you can see the exact piece of content or the exact marketing message or the exact ad that they clicked on. And that's going to tell you, was this person interested in us because we work with a particular platform that they want to work with? Were they interested in us because of what we had to say on this particular topic? Were they price sensitive and they clicked on something that said that we're an affordable option? Well, which, by the way, I highly recommend to a lot of entrepreneurs, don't be the affordable option. It's never worth it. But what did they click on? What was the messaging that really got them jazzed to work with us? And you're not going to get that unless you've got a CRM. So I am a huge fangirl of CRMs as a concept. Mm-hmm. That's why we work with so many CRMs over at ThoughtLight and recommend that to our clients as one of the first things you should do. One of the very first things you should do when you start your own company or you start dealing with customers is get that CRM in place.
Damn right. The one that we use is Go High Level. I'm sure you've heard of that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Changed my life. And it took me till, I guess, year four, or maybe year five, until I got a CRM that I'm really proud of and I was able to build everything from it. But my God, that has set everything right. And so Go High Level, and that's how we built our agency off of it. Now we help people do the same thing. And it is a game changer with automations, emails, text messages, all in one spot, having all the team members be able to see everything very clearly. I believe it's your chapter one, you have some metrics here that I want to share. And guys, this is pretty awesome. Some of these numbers here, I'm going to just read them off. Consumers say that they are 80% more likely to purchase from a brand that uses their data to personalize offers, messaging, and other aspects of marketing. Number two metric is nearly two-thirds of executives feel that that data-driven marketing is critical to competitive advantage. Number three, the CMO Council finds that marketing funnels are no longer linear, which makes customer journeys more complex to understand than ever. I agree. Having multiple pipelines, it's pretty wild to see how it's not as linear as you hoped. There's another one here. 40% of marketers are increasing their investments in data-driven marketing. And number five, when it comes to what data organizations are using to get results, 63% of companies that have increased their conversion rates using data have used customer journey metrics, while 83% have used consumer data for personalization. And that phrase, customer journey metrics, I realized that, man, we're able to track the customer journey, and it does rely on a lot of touches and us understanding where they're at in the pipeline. And it depends on us having that perfect avatar, the right messaging, so they can actually move forward. And you're able to see their interest level based off of if they watch videos, if they show up to the webinars, if they watch your social media. Having all of that to see, my God, it makes it much easier for us to just tailor our message directly to people wherever they're at. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these things that we just listed off here?
Absolutely. I think the first one really struck me the most when I first read it, which is, you know, we have this common belief as marketers and as brands that people don't want us to invade their privacy by gathering too much data on them. We think that, oh, well, you know, we don't want to send those creepy messages telling people, hey, I saw that you were on our website looking at love seats today. Are you interested in buying one? And we think, oh, geez, no one's going to want to read that. But the reality is the majority of consumers, and they know they're being tracked, right? They expect to be tracked. What they don't like is if you are tracking them in a way that just seems exploitative, by which I mean you're just tracking them and spamming them, sending them stuff that they're not all that interested in.
Yep.
And it's aggressive. What they actually want us to be doing is sending them offers that matter to them. I mean, think about in the old days, you would go into a store and the staff there knew you. They knew what you were interested in. I'm renovating my family's 70-year-old house. It was almost 70-year-old house. And I go down to my local Ace Hardware and they know me. They get me in and out fast. They don't necessarily know exactly what I'm working on, but they have a general sense that I'm a DIYer. I need tools that are, you know, amateur friendly, and I need things that are budget friendly because I have to spend so much money on this money pit and charming antique house. So that level of customer service that you get at your local store where you've built relationships, they want to see that translated into the cyber world. They don't want to be treated like just a number. No, they don't want to be intruded on, but they also don't want to be sent spam or generic messaging. And so it's that sweet spot of knowing what your customers want and sending them relevant offers at relevant times. So nothing's more frustrating than something following you around as an ad online that you've already bought, or something hitting you when you're at a different point of the customer journey than what it is targeting you at. Like you're still gathering information and this is an ad is targeting you as if you had already made up your mind. Now there's a lot of nuance to that. Nobody's going to get it exactly right all the time. But if you've got good customer journey mapping, if you understand overall when people tend to convert, by which I mean, for instance, after what touches, after what kind of content exposure, are they more likely to convert? You are much more likely to be sending your prospects useful, interesting content at the right moment. And so you can get that information again from your CRM, because that's going to tell you, oh, so people go to our website, they read blog posts X, Y, and Z. After reading those, they get really excited to do business with us and they tend to, you know, send us an email, become a lead, and then they don't convert right away. But then after a couple more touches, where, for instance, we send them some educational videos or we have them do a product demo that's, you know, self-contained and they don't have to talk to a salesperson, that's when they tend to convert. And sending, for instance, putting them into like a retargeting, a remarketing campaign at that time, that's when it's most effective. You're still not going to please all of the people all of the time, but the more you have a handle on those customer journeys of what the right touch point is at the right time, the more you're likely to hit it right and give people that content, that messaging that they actually crave, which is the relevant offers at the relevant times. So that, I think, touches on, hey, that's what your consumers want. And the brands that are doing that, the brands that are basing their marketing off the customer journey and not just supposition or what's always worked, they're the ones who are really winning. But again, it means not only building an effective CRM, but also paying attention to the data that it's giving you. Your CRM is telling you things about what converts, what doesn't convert, what messaging works with people at what point in their customer journey and when you should be doubling down and when you should be taking a step back. It's your job to start looking at that data comprehensively, and the brands that do, they're the ones that are winning out there right now.
It never ends too. I realized that when we first started out, it was very primitive, very much like in The Sandlot. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but they start out of the gate with something very primitive just to get something started. And then by the time they, you know, exhausted all their resources, they're so elaborate with their plan, but it's like, all right, we're getting a little too crazy with this. And I guess that's the CRM. I first started off by saying, okay, as long as you have contacted us or we have your email, you're all going to get the same email. And then I realized, oh my God, is that a problem? Because I would be sending emails to clients that I've worked with on three or four different books saying in the email, you really should write a book and here's why. Wait a second. They already know. So this never ends, but kind of analyzing every misstep does give you this chance to like fix yourself and just keep getting more refined and meeting them where they're at. And I think one of the things that I learned from, I think it was Cody Sanchez, create a newsletter or create an email that you actually make it the individual excited to open up and read. The moment you do that, now you can build a real list. Now you can build a real business. Make it exciting for an email to pop in. As everybody's creating all this spam mail, make it so there's an offer or something that gives value. And when you do that, wherever they're at, you can win big. And one of the things you talk about here, I would love for you to just elaborate on this case study, metrics-driven strategies in real life, Coca-Cola case study. Now, it's cool. You kind of outline how Coca-Cola started off as a medicine in the 1800s. What is this case study all about?
So this case study is really about understanding what your customers want. It's about understanding and mapping their preferences and how those change over time or don't change over time. So we, taking a step back and kind of tying it back into the CRM, we often tend to assume that customers endlessly crave change. And we also start to think that customers are a little bit more of, a monolith than they actually are. So if you look at your CRM data, or in the case of Coca-Cola, look at your customer data, you can start to differentiate what customers want, not just on the messaging level, but also on the product level. So the Coca-Cola case study, in terms of the takeaways for all of us as individual marketers, it's really about trying to understand who your customer segments are and what their different preferences are in terms of not just product, but place, price, and messaging. And that doesn't mean trying to be all things to all people and having, 50 different varieties of your product, although Coca-Cola, obviously, they have a very varied product line. It's much more so about how do you understand who your customers are on a segment level, and then start to tailor to your most profitable segments. Because you're not Coca-Cola. If you're a small business, you can't create quite as much variety. But what Coca-Cola does so brilliantly is they look at their different customer segments. They understand them deeply in terms of how they buy, what their motivations are, what they love about the brand, and tailoring their outreach to them, while at the same time making that perfect balance between being trend-driven enough that you stay relevant, but not so trend-driven that you start to confuse your consumers and go in, obviously the most famous direction with Coca-Cola was their disastrous new Coke. But so you start at the same time being a solid, reliable, trustworthy brand, but at the same time also being a brand that your consumers can rely on. And I think that comes down to understanding your customers on a very sort of intimate level. And like I said, at the same time, understanding that different customers want different things from your brand. And that, again, your CRM is going to be your guide for that.
In the next chapter, you talk about customer data, the core four, and I'm reading through some of them, but I'd rather you just kind of explain these. So what are the core four?
Absolutely. So I think when you look at your customer data, and I want to, talk about the different ways in which, kind of take a step back and think about this. So the core four is going to vary depending on what you're trying to achieve. And by that, I don't mean, that they are different for different people. What I'm talking about is where you're going to focus is going to change over time. And what I mean by all of that is not everybody is going to have the same focus, right, at different times in their journey. So in terms of what the core four is, it's kind of my framework in order to help people understand what they need to be doing with their marketing at different times. And that's where, that's what was my motivation in developing it. So,
yeah, so I'll read them off here. Delivering, is this one of the core fours? Delivering personalized content, offers, and experiences. According to Blake Morgan, writing in Forbes, 70% of consumers expect brands to provide them with tailored experience, taking their business elsewhere if they are treated as a part of a crowd. There's the personal touch, which I think is crucial in every aspect. So that's big. Number two is assessing individual customers' potential for your brand. So what is this? This includes predicting customer lifetime value, really tough to do. I think we're getting way better at it. Identifying customers likely to churn and determining which customers are worth retaining, which is another thing we're getting better and better at. And I think most companies do. Is that right?
They are. And so if we take a step back, and again, I didn't want to sort of waffle about it, but I want to make sure that people don't feel like you need to have all of this data at the same time. So the main four areas of customer data is, first of all, the number one, the core is your CRM data. But I think we've talked about that so much that I want to kind of take a step back from that. So your CRM data is your first source of truth when it comes to your core four sources of data. And that's going to be, first of all, you want to know your customer acquisition. That's something that's really critical for you. So you want your customer acquisition to be as buttoned down as possible. But the main pieces of data that I think are the most important are what is the revenue that customers are generating? You want to look at your conversion data. You want to look at your communications data and customer loyalty, value, and retention. Those are the really, truly core four data. And all of that comes out of your CRM. So what I mean by revenue data is take the long range view. Don't think about, and again, I feel very hesitant saying this always with startups in mind, you may not have any revenue right now from your customers, or it may be at the very early stage of things. But look at overall, maybe it's a year from now, maybe it's 2 years down the line. Who are your most revenue generating customers and customer segments? So that's really important. A lot of times people stop there, however. The second part of the core four is conversion. So revenue is number one. And again, that's coming out of your CRM data. So too is conversion. How many touches does it take to individual consumers in different segments to convert? And where are those conversions coming from? In other words, are they coming from social media? Are they coming from SEO? Are they coming from advertising? I want, however, to emphasize that you need to take the long view with that. And the long view is that just because something was never your last touch conversion, in other words, it's not the last thing people see or engage with right before they convert, doesn't mean that it's not playing a role in conversions. That's why customer journey data is so important. So for example, a lot of times I find that for many of our clients, social media doesn't look like it's a conversion channel because it's not the last thing people see before they convert. But if you look at the customer journey, it's almost always a touch point for high converting customers. So in other words, the ones who are converting at a 10%, 20% rate, those segments almost always have a social media touch point. So people will say, well, I'm going to stop doing social media because it's not driving any revenue for me. But if you take a step back at the customer journey, yes, it is. So that's why you want to look at your conversion metrics. And so the third of the core four is communications. And that's what are the messages that are resonating with a customer, either on the individual level or the segment level within your marketing programs. So is it, you know, do they like your thought leadership? Do they like things that are quick, funny, viral hits? What are those metrics? And I break down in my book a little bit about more of the nuts and bolts things as well, like what is their open rate? What is their email click to open rate? How engaged are they on social media? What kind of reviews are they leaving? And all of that's important. But I make a really important to customers, to my clients' point, is that the most important, though, is what is the actual message that's resonating with them? And you're going to measure that with their click to open rate and with their open rate and what social media they're engaging with. But don't get fixated on clicks. You're fixating on the messaging that's leading to the clicks. The clicks are the metric telling you what messages are important. So don't say, oh, we had X number of clicks on our social media content or a 20% engagement rate on our social media content last month. That's really good, but that's looking at it on the channel level. When you're looking at the core four, you're looking at it on the communications level. And on the communications level, you're really caring about the messages. Did everything you post on social media, for instance, get a 20% engagement rate? I highly doubt it. Some messages resonated more than others. What you want to do is home in What were those messages? What patterns can we see in the messages that are resonating with people? Because that's what our customers want. And if you deliver what they want, they're going to be happy customers for life. And then four, and again, this is also a metric that I think a lot of startups may not have yet. So don't stress if you do not have this metric. Customer loyalty, value, and retention metrics. Maybe right now you haven't been in business long enough to even know how loyal your customers are going to be,
right,
or what lifetime customer value is. So don't stress about that last one. So, you know, the core four is important, but I think the two that are most important right now are your communications and your conversions metrics. The revenue metric, which is number one of the core four, and the customer loyalty metric, which is number four of the core four, those will come in time. Right now, home in on what's getting people knocking on your door.
So is there anything that you can convey to our audience, and including myself, really, that are sort of guidelines, whether it's individuals need to be touched? I heard it used to be four times, then it went to seven. I heard it's even more than that now for them to move forward. I guess it depends on the business, the industry, the price point, all that. But any metric that really stands out of touches or emails to send out per week or text messages or social media posts, any marketing metrics that really stand as a pillars in your life?
I think in many cases that seven touch is still true. By the way, people are often shocked to find that there is literally no concerted, credible body of research validating those 7 to 11 touches, because the rule of thumb has always been it's 7 to 11 touches. Somebody said that once, and that just became, like, I don't want to say an urban legend, but it kind of almost is, because no one has researched this enough to say this for real. So Google, on the other hand, and I'm going to share this link with people, is that they need 7 hours of interaction across 11 touch points. So that's another 7-11 rule. But who's going to interact with your brand for 7 hours?
Well, like, social media, podcasts, that all makes so much. That makes sense.
So the 7 touches was the original, I don't want to say urban legend, but it was the original statement that was made, and it's got circulated everywhere. But it's actually another rule is the 7 hours, 11 touch points, and, quote, 4 different locations, which, you know, might be 4 different channels, for instance. So that actually makes a lot more sense. And that's data coming out of Google, which knows everything about everybody. So I honestly believe that more than the myth of you just need 7 touches, because those 7 touches, if they happen in quick succession, they probably will feel to the consumer like just one touch, and they're going to forget it. Ooh. So, you know, they're like, if it's in 1 day or 2 days, they see your ad 7 times, do you think they're going to be like, oh, wow, I love this brand? Or are they going to be like, this brand's irritating me? So I think people can get caught up on, 7 touches, and think, well, let's just do them. And, you know, they can backfire by being done in too short a space of time, so it all merges into people's mind at once, or worse yet, makes you seem like a spammy brand. Oh. So I think it's those hours that are more important.
I really like that. I've interviewed hundreds of people. I've never heard that metric. So that is so significant. It makes a lot of sense, because my greatest customers have listened to my podcast, have listened to my book, have watched my courses. The hours matter, right? It's not the touches, because I could make 7 posts, right? 7 tweets. I can put an ad up. I could probably send a text message. None of that matters unless they are engaging, which they're consuming the content. Oh my God, is that great? And that even is relevant to the dating world, if you think about it. 7 hours. You got to spend 7 hours with someone before you're comfortable with them. Really, really powerful. I love that. And then the 11 touches. I think that makes more sense in today's world. So 7 hours, 11 touches. You guys apply that, it's game changer for you. Wow. Great nugget there.
Thank you. And by the way, 7 hours, 11 touches across 4 different channels, or as they call it, locations. So mix it up a little bit, because, and I've gotten this feedback from end users, customers, for instance, of ThoughtLight, my agency, that if you're in multiple different channels, they tend to see you as more serious. They're like, wow, you're everywhere. You clearly are like an established brand. This is especially important when you're not yet fully established timeline-wise. You haven't been around for long. That just being on those four different channels, like with you, with your podcast, with your blog posts, with your social media posts, it shows that you are committed to your business. And so don't worry that you haven't been around for that long, because it takes 7 hours on four different channels to get people to know, like, and trust you.
God, it's great. That is such a great takeaway. So thank you for that. I didn't have any clue about that, but I'm going to use that in a lot of my speeches going forward. Just so you know, I'm going to steal that.
Feel
100%.
Free. And you don't have to give me credit for it, because it's actually coming out of Google.
Oh, well then, yeah, I'll credit you. I'd rather credit you than Google, just so you know.
Well, thank you.
But outside of your own book, this is a question we ask all of our guests. Outside of your own book, is there one that maybe put you on this path, maybe had you fall in love with marketing or business in general?
Yes. It's actually, so the book that put me on this path, I started out as a copywriter. And the book that started me out as loving to write, you're going to laugh, it's Strunk and White's Elements of Style, because it talks about how to make your key point in as concise and yet engaging a way as possible. So this is a really old book. It's like 100 years old. It's been updated many, many times, however. And it's one of my favorite books of all time. If you do any kind of content marketing, run, don't walk to read the latest edition of Elements of Style. It is a life changer. Now, in terms of marketing books, though, I am a huge fan of Anne Handley, my fellow person from Massachusetts. She is just a great person. And I also just love her work. So Content Rules from Anne Handley. She also wrote a great book called Everybody Writes. That's a really huge book for me. I'm also a big reader of Seth Godin's blog.
Oh, of course. Gotta love Seth.
I mean, you gotta. And then finally, of course, David Meerman Scott, sort of the granddaddy of them all. Not to imply that David's not a very young person, but his new rules of marketing and PR changed my life as well.
Nice. Is there a website or a social media channel that you are very active on that people can look you up at?
LinkedIn. I'm all over the place on LinkedIn in the sense of, like, I am writing, I'm contributing to articles, I'm posting there regularly. So I'm most active there, and it's where I would really welcome people connecting with me anytime.
Wow. You just gave me something that I won't forget, right? So I really appreciate that piece of advice, and I thank you for your time. You're a social media individual, you love marketing. I think we could probably talk for hours and hours. That 7 hours, probably no problem, because I could talk. I love marketing. I realized that what really set us apart in the very beginning was how we presented ourselves, you know, the feeling that we gave off. We attracted a certain type of clientele, and everything was set for success because of that. So marketing is really what I lean on as our greatest asset, I guess, in the very beginning. So that's why I love it so much. But anyways, Christina Inge, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's been a joy.
Well, remember, guys, $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.